Welcome back to the Wolf of Queen Street podcast series. Welcome back to the audio podcast or the video series if you join us today. Before we get started, just want to mention our sponsors for the show. Six Figure Secrets, a team of guys and girls helping businesses upscale themselves to six or seven figures over a certain period of time of weeks, months, or even longer if it is needed. These guys and girls have been through around the block. They know what success looks like. They've learned from past experience and they implemented in your business across the board to take you to that next level. Myself and my guest today is actually part of the mastermind program for Six Figure Secrets. And this is where we got introduced and where I was lucky enough to be able to get Alana on the show for today. But if they sound like something that you are interested in, go see them at sixfiguresecrets.co. But just a disclaimer before I bring Alana onto the show today. Today's episodes are going to be talking about your gut, your stomach, the stuff that comes out your stomach, and overall not feeling well about some of the foods that sometimes you eat. If that is not your appetite per se, sorry the pun, if that's not something you want to listen to, I give you 5 seconds to leave. But otherwise, if you're interested, I'm so happy to bring Alana Scott onto the show from A Little Bit Yummy, someone that has taken a problem in her life and made an exceptionally successful business that is helping people with gut issues, gut problems, and a place to go where they can feel safe, where they can feel inspired, and fundamentally have fun with eating again. Alana, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that beautiful introduction. And yes, I might talk about poop on the show, so if that's not your cup of tea, you do want to leave like right now. Otherwise, we'll have some fun.
Yeah, totally. It's funny. I was just doing some research about yourself, Alana, and watching a video that you stood up at the Edmund Hillary discussion a few years ago. I think it was actually 2017 when you did that, and it was a brilliant story how you were talking about, you know, there's that moment when you eat something and your body goes, "Ooh, I do not like that," and the reaction you have to it, you know. So going into that, talk us through a little bit through your journey of yourself and your personal, because you've been diagnosed with IBS, you suffer from celiac, you're allergic to nuts, you're intolerant to dairy. So you literally can, from a person that doesn't understand it, you can eat an ice block. Is about what is about safest without having the right knowledge.
Like eliminate ice block. I'd be down. So I've been on a huge journey myself. I was actually a business student when I started to notice that my gut was playing up. Like I'd be at networking events and I'd just always be in the corner trying to have a sneaky fart. And it sort of progressed from being this thing that I found kind of funny to a point where I got so ill, I couldn't leave the house anymore to get to my classes. I was really, really ill. I was losing heaps of weight. I had the most unpredictable bowel habits, like going out for drinks with friends was sort of like out of the question because I'd be stuck in the bathroom half the night sort of thing. And it took me quite a while to pluck up the courage to go and have that conversation with my doctor and be like, hey, you know, something's not quite right here. Like I'm now chained to the toilet instead of being, you know, a 20 something free to go and roam and party and do my work and network. And so the first thing I had to do was talk to the doctor. So if you're having gut issues and you haven't seen your doctor, it's not normal. Go and talk to them. They can probably help you out. And then from there, I went through a whirlwind of a diagnosis process, which was quite drawn out, quite long, quite lengthy and very tiring, where I got diagnosed with celiac disease, as you mentioned, irritable bowel syndrome and a tree nut allergy as well. And then I was told that basically I have to change everything that I was eating. And that was probably the most depressing moment of my life so far.
I can imagine, you know, going to that situation of you're happy to know you've got a diagnosis, right? To be able to understand what's going on. But then you look at the diagnosis, you come from it and you go, oh shit. Now it goes, you know, now I go, I know what's wrong with me, but therefore it means I know what I got to do to fix it. And when you look at, I think it's, you guys call it the low FODMAP diet that you got to follow with IBS. It's a very interesting acronym. I won't get you to explain what it is, but I won't get you to show the scientific term behind it. but pretty much it takes out all the good stuff, all the good stuff that made me a large mammal. So
a lot of things, like your Agnew garlic is probably one of the things people struggle with the most. It's the basis of all of our cooking, right? Mm-hmm. You throw in that onion, you throw in that garlic, you throw in your stock and whatever veggies, and boom, you're done, right?
Yep.
So yeah, you lose onion and garlic with the low FODMAP diet. You lose things like wheat, rye, and barley in large quantities. You also lose your stone fruit, mushrooms, lots of sweet potato, and all sort of disappear. And so you have to start reframing from, oh my God, there is absolutely nothing fun left to eat, to, hang on a second, there's all of these foods over here that I can still love. Like, potatoes, amazing. There's so many ways you can have it. You can mash it, fry it, whatever. It's glorious. You've got lots of veggies you can still play with, lots of fruits. You can make the most amazing chocolate self-sourcing pudding while still on this diet. Like, there's food there, but you have to figure out how to make it fun again.
Yep.
And when I first got diagnosed, there was no one in that space going, hang on, if we combine all these ingredients, we're going to end up with a little bit of magic.
Yep.
And so that's sort of where my business hat kicked in as a business student. I was like, hang on, I can write, I can cook. Couldn't photograph to save myself at the time, but I've since learned how to photograph food. And I was like, why don't I do something in this space? And why not? You know, it's there. There are people needing help and support to love their food again.
You know, it's a great part that you find yourself in, and you find yourself in a place of having a problem personally. Right, you come in now, and I've been told you got to follow the low FODMAP diet. There wasn't a lot of resources socially or on YouTube that gave you the right guidance and the right truth and so forth. And it's a challenge we see in today's life. Going, you know, even with my medical history and my part over the last 12 months, there's not a lot of places where I can go to and get a trust resource that is not someone that's been down my story or be down my path and you know, and being that of getting through a brain tumor and so forth. Because a lot of it that the white papers I read is from a doctor saying, this is what you should experience and this is the way you should do it. But they're not relatable to me, because fundamentally, unless you've gone through the surgery, you can't tell me what I'm going through. And with yourself going, I'm going through that situation and realizing, hold on, I'm struggling to figure out for myself. There must be so many other people going through the exact same problem. Why not I stand up what I am doing and what I want to put together and start it up as a business or an initiative and help others through their food problems and their challenges? And that's what we said. And that's where you stood up a little bit of Yummy.
Exactly. And you're dead right there. I went, look, I'm going through this journey myself. I can write about it. Mm-hmm. And then I took another step further. So I'm like, the doctors and the dietitians are the ones prescribing this, right? And they do play an important role in our health journeys, no matter what that journey looks like, whether it's diagnosis or suggesting something that we could do to help. So what I've done at A Little Bit Yummy is I've actually combined forces with some of the top dietitians around the world. So I write the content, I make it delicious and yummy and relatable and friendly for the users, and then we get the professionals to come in the back end and just go through it and just make sure that, you know, hey, what, this is credible, this is still safe for you to do, and you can still have this as part of your management plan. So we're kind of trying to create a different model for sort of moving forward on your pathway to health, where we're bringing that science and that relatability together as a partnership. Does that make sense?
Yep, totally. It's bringing more credibility. I mean, at the end of the day, it gives you the tick box. But there's more credibility because you yourself are going through it and can say, this supports my situation. And then there's medical credibility behind it. That's where a lot of businesses we see these days, they go to the consultants or they get all the credibility, but there's nothing relatable. And they think it's going to sell and they think it's going to work and they think the brand is just going to take itself up. And people fundamentally turn around and go, sorry, that's not relatable to the normal person in the street. And I remember a good few years ago, there was a guy called, or not, the guy's still around. His name's LL Cool J, one of the coolest hip-hop guys in the 90s. He's still ripped to shit in modern times. I think he's about 50 years old. And he brought out this gym book. And I know this because I bought it. Brought out this gym book in the early 2000s. Like, if you follow my book, you'll fully get, you know, this whole good old before clickbait. You'll get the body, you'll lose all the weight. And I was big into the gym scene. So I was like, great. I'm going to go buy LL Cool J's book. So I bought it, they shipped it in, it came in, I was super excited, got the book, went through the programs, and I was like, okay, there's nothing too unique, and then read each of the stories. And then as I started to get to the story, I was like, well, this is not really relatable, because he was like, oh, when I travel on the road, you know, as we do in our lives, and we're going from one place to the other place, and he was talking about, oh, if he was on the road when he was doing shoots, he had his own chef with him. And then if you got into a restaurant, his chef would go into the kitchen and then make him food, not buy food off the restaurant. And all these sort of scenarios. And I went through the book. I read it through after a week. I actually closed the book, contacted a couple of mates and said, hey, who wants the book? I'm not going to even use it, because it is actually not relatable. It was him saying if you had a lot of money, you could look like him. But that's not the way it was sold. And that's where a lot of the problems I see, in where we're trying to help and inspire people today, is it's not relatable to the end person.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up a good point there. I think he might have missed his mark with who his target market was for that book. So I think whatever business you're working on, right, you want to make sure you're selling your authentic story. You're creating something that's relatable for your customer base, whoever that might be. And then you're also doing something that's attainable for your customer base. So whenever I'm in the kitchen, I'm not whipping up 5-star gourmet meals that need the most exotic ingredients that you can find in the New Zealand market or elsewhere. I'm going, what do I think people already have in their pantry that they could just grab out and biff into this meal to make it magic? And so I think that's one of the key successes to a good business or a good brand, is that you keep listening to your customers and you keep adjusting your story and your resources or your products or your subscriptions to really focus in on their needs, because they'll tell you what their needs are. Like if he had listened to you, he would have been like, the everyday person does not behave.
Yeah, totally. You know, and that's true, because a lot of it, if I look at your brand and everything, like you just recently put down a lockdown list, you know, obviously with everyone going on and what's most important to have in your pantry when you can't get as stuff easily available. So that was a simple, basic insight to go, hey, over the next period of time, no matter where you are, this is most important what to have on your shelf. If you are on the low FODMAP diet, or if you are on this sort of diet or in that sort of diet, it's fully respecting the customer or the person that was having their challenges. And it also gives the ease for a new person that's being diagnosed that goes, I've got no idea. Because I know on your programs that people can sign up. We'll give the website a little bit later. But people can sign up and they get a full printout of what your grocery list should look like. I give a full support of here's each plan and each diet. So the advanced person that's been in for years and years might say, okay, I don't worry about the grocery list because I totally understand that. I just want this. I want this pretty, you know, muffin or whatever this dish you've made. Yeah, that's what I want. And I know you always said the first time you went shopping after your diagnosis, you walked out the grocery store with a chicken breast and a carrot.
Oh, I did. And I had such a big cry as I walked around that supermarket as well, because I just wanted someone to tell me what to eat and how to make it taste good. And so I think you brought up a really good point here about different stages of your customer journey, right?
Yep.
For me, I've got customers at the very first stage that have been diagnosed with their gut issue and they're just going, man, what do I do next? How do I feed myself? And so those are our real newbies, and we handle those newbies in a very different way to how we handle someone who might be a couple of years on the track, who are just a bit bored with their food and looking for a bit more interesting inspiration to play with, or some new ideas for their kitchen. And so knowing your target market and how they move through their different lifestyle phases is really, really important and key to looking after your customer as well.
You know, so I'm going to ask a question which is going to challenge your thoughts, right? So I've done some of my day job work. I've worked in the hospitals and I've spoken to some nurses that have done some research into allergies and the way bodies react to certain food types. There was a big Netflix special a while ago about nut allergies, and they sort of spoke about that. You know, 20 years ago, no one had nut allergies, or not as much, and now almost everyone has a nut allergy or some form of allergies, whether it's better diagnosis or not. But the challenge was, and research was, that we're in a bit of a society. Okay, let's just acknowledge there's about 1 to 5% of people that will die if they touch some food product. I'm not talking about those people, right? That's, there we go. I'm not talking about Lalana in that instance. But what I'm talking about is when you have a young kid and the young kid eats something, goes, oh, mommy, daddy, I don't like, you know, I don't like how that felt to my tummy. So what the parents do, go, oh, my kid obviously doesn't like gluten. My kid doesn't like wheat. I'm going to remove it. And in 5 years later, because they've never touched it, their body naturally almost becomes intolerant to that product. So then you almost give an intolerance to the child just because you didn't push it. In third world countries, there's almost no intolerance to food products because third world countries, the parents sit around and go, you don't eat it, you don't eat, right? And their body just gets used to that. I'd love to know what your thoughts on that is.
Oh, this is such a fascinating topic, isn't it? So I think there's a few different things to pack into here. First off, as you mentioned, our diagnostic tools have greatly improved since back in the day, and different countries eat different foods naturally. So yeah, in some countries, you won't find them eating the tree nuts and the peanuts, so they're less likely to have strong allergies to those foods. So that's one of the things. The second thing I want to mention with young kids is it actually takes a kid trying a food about 20 different times before they can decide whether or not they eat it. Some kids will have true allergies and intolerances, and if you think your kid is one of those, go and see a pediatric dietitian because they can help you figure out if your kid's just being a little bit fussy or if there's something else going on, and their bowel movements and skin will be the keys to telling you if they're actually being fussy or if they're having a reaction to that. And then the other point I want to make is that if you look at our society as a whole, and if you look at the nations who are the healthiest and live the longest, you'll find that there's a few key things they do. They eat a lot more whole grains. They eat 30 plus different types of veggies in their diet every single week. And they reduce the intake of processed foods and the types, and they only eat certain types of protein. So they might be like leaner meats or, you know, plant-based protein or, you know, oilier fish that are high in omega-3s. And then if you look at our everyday society and what we tend to eat as a society as a whole, we're going to our ready-made meals, our takeout meals, our meals high in sugar and fat and sodium because they taste really, really good. Mm-hmm. And the issue with that is that we're not exposing our gut every single day to a wide range of different foods. So the diversity of our gut microbiome is a lot more reduced, it's a lot narrower, and then that in itself can lead to a whole range of issues, from gut issues to skin issues to, you know, you name it, can be kind of linked back to the gut now. And so one of the takeaways, if nothing else from this, is eat your veggies, get lots of variety, aim for lots of color on your plates every day, and, you know, if you do that, you're doing your body a great favor and you're much more likely to stay healthier as a whole if you do that. Does that make sense? And just as a disclaimer here, I'm not a dietitian, but I work with a team of dietitians. So if you've got any queries about your personal health, you should go and see a dietitian as well. They can really, really help you figure out what's right for you as well.
I mean, it makes total sense, but you're talking to a South African born, where we eat meat and potatoes most of our lives, you know, and in veggies a lot later on when the body craves it. So it's a sort of a joke because, you know, when I met my wife in my early 20s and so forth, I didn't think I touched greens. I still got good friends now that will not touch anything that's colorful. So they'll eat their meats and they'll eat potatoes and, you know, the rest, but there'll be no greens on those plates. But I always looked, it's funny enough, because I always looked at it at my father. It was very similar through his, you know, his 30s or 40s that I can remember as a young kid. And then it got to a later stage and all of a sudden salads had to become part of it because the body started going, hey, we need some of this good nutrients. So I try to implement in my life, but I'm a large mammal and I like more of the junk food than the quality food. But taking a step back or taking a bit of a thought through. So anyone that's listening at the moment and says, okay, I think, you know, I'm having bowel issues, you know, I'm going to eat something and literally top to bottom, you know, straight away, I don't want to go out the house, you know, I don't know, you know, what to do about it. Other than going to the doctor, what is the simple sort of insight you could tell people just about the, furthermore on their food habits, if you think they've got IBS or might not have it fully, but they're just a bit of sensitive to stomach?
Yeah, for sure. There's lots you can sort of dig into in this space here. So first off, you want to look for advice that is credible, so it has some form of scientific backing behind it. So the first thing we normally check is, are you meeting your daily healthy eating principles? So that means, are you getting enough fiber? Are you eating your 5+ a day in terms of your fruit and veggies? Are you eating your lean meats? And are you eating, you know, a good balance of carbs throughout your day? And making sure you're also not overdoing your carbonated beverages, so your fizzy drinks, you're not chewing too much gum, and you're not rushing your meals. So if you're kind of ticked off those boxes and you're like, right, done all that, think I'm achieving those goals, and your gut is still playing up, then the next step is to start looking at your different diets that might be able to help you. And this is where I would normally recommend, before jumping on a highly restrictive diet, because it does have social implications, that you do get a bit of further advice for you. But there's a few key areas we'd look at. One of the key areas, if you have IBS, would be looking to see if you're lactose intolerant. So this is looking at dairy products like yogurt and cream and ice cream and milk, which are really, really high in lactose, and seeing if you swap those for low lactose options, does that reduce your symptoms? If it does, great, you might not need to do anything else. If it doesn't, then the next step is normally looking at sort of a low FODMAP diet or a simplified low FODMAP diet, where you take the high FODMAP foods, maybe it's onion, garlic, wheat bread, and your avocado out of your diet, and you see if that makes a significant difference to your symptoms. If it does, that's good. You're not stuck on this diet for life. You can then go through and test the different groups, because within that you've got lactose, fructose, some sugar alcohols like they're called polyols, mannitol or sorbitol. This is why your chewing gum's a laxative. It's full of sorbitol. So if you chew gum, pay attention. Maybe cut that out. You cut those out of your diet along with some things called fructans and oligosaccharides. These are your beans. This is why beans make you fart. It's because of the FODMAPs. Try cutting those out, and then you can systematically test each of those groups and end up on what we call a flexi FODMAP diet, which is where you have the best of both worlds, where you get good symptom control, you understand your triggers, but you can still enjoy a bit of food freedom when you know your limitations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. Now, can someone that's listening to this and go, hey, you know, can I follow a low FODMAP diet if I've got nothing wrong with me? If I don't suffer from IBS, you know, and I want to look at something that I actually want to appreciate, a good gut health overall, is it still a recommended diet, or is it only for some people that are struggling with gut issues?
So I'm going to say a little cautionary statement here. The FODMAPs are actually good for your gut bacteria, because what they do is they feed your good gut bacteria. It's kind of like fast food to them. They ferment it, they get all happy on it, and it's this fermentation process that leads to the gas and all the other symptoms like diarrhea and cramping and bloating that comes with it. So if you have a completely happy gut, I'm going to say, instead of doing FODMAPs, go more towards eating your 30+, you know, plant-based foods a week. That would be my recommendation. Looking for your lean protein sources, whatever that might be in your diet, and then making sure that you're making those healthier choices when it comes to having sort of an occasional treat as well, because treats are part of a good balanced diet too.
I love it. And without even realizing it, it just adds more integrity in your business, because to anyone who's listening at the moment, Alana's business is fundamentally selling memberships and people to come on and to buy the diet and the programs. And she just openly said that if you're not someone suffering from IBS, don't come to my program. Where most other people out there would go, yeah, you can use my program, don't worry. Even if you're in this situation or that situation, come on over, you can sign up and you can get my program, and which is a crock of shit, and that's why people get caught out. But I love that answer, and it just shows your integrity and what you mean and what you're trying to achieve, Alana.
Thank you. It's really, really important to us that we keep everyone as healthy as possible. So we've got a really big do no harm principle with us, and we're very, very honest about who should and shouldn't do our programs. But if you do have gut issues, if you are suffering with celiac disease or with IBS, or even sometimes with inflammatory bowel disease, then please reach out to us. We've got lots of resources that might be able to help you on your particular journey.
So earlier on, you said talking about, you know, removing avos. Avos is one you've got to remove out, right? I can hear the millennials throwing their cell phones at the screen going, I'm not going to get rid of my avos. But one thing is, as a little side joke, as they say in New Zealand, if you give up avos, you might be able to afford a house. because most times in the seasons or whenever it is, it's ridiculous in this country. It's something like $20 to get two slices of toast, which you can't eat anyone on a low fat map, and a slice of avo with something else on it. And it's like, you know, five times or four times the price of a coffee or so forth. But yeah, so that might that might help some people's savings if they have to remove avos out of it.
Absolutely. And it gets even worse if you add gluten-free toast into that mix as well. So you pay your mortgage for a month at that point.
Pretty much. So as we're coming up to the end of the episode today, Alana, is there anything, any sort of further insights you want to leave our listeners to, sort of things to consider over the next few days into the next few weeks?
Yeah, so first off, if you're a listener with a business, dive deep on your customers and start listening to their journeys. There's often, if you're solving a nitty-gritty problem like I am, so like people with gut issues, they tend to congregate on forums, right? Whether that's on Reddit, in Facebook groups, you know, in Instagram tribes, you will find them. So go and listen to them and really listen to what they're saying. Understand, you know, where are they coming from in terms of their pain points? Are they coming from a place of embarrassment or sadness or pain or frustration? And then use that as a powerful tool to help you better your communication with them, to help you better your products and services you can offer them. So if you're listening to this as a business person, then that's one of my key tips, is listen to your customers. They are always right, even if they're sometimes very annoying. So go and listen to them. And then if you're listening to this and you are having gut issues, then please take some time to reach out to me. We're probably going to do this in a minute, so I'm probably going to ruin the next segment, but you can find me at alittlebityummy.com, and I'm always open for a chat. So you can use the little chat bubble on the site to say hi and to come and talk to me about what your journey is, and I can see if there's anything I can do to support you.
No, it's I love it. And yes, you've already mentioned that. It's a little bit of yummy, alittlebityummy.com. And you can find that obviously on all the social platforms. And I have said to Alana in the beginning, she's got one of the best looking, healthiest Instagrams. The meals look amazing. The photography is amazing. And she does it herself. It's all our own meals, own photography. It's not studio made or anything like that. And that's when you go and then you look and you go, damn, I want that. That's the stuff that's on her website. So when you sign up, you get access to those meal plans and so forth. And that's where you can see the quality of what it is. But Alana, I think, you know, as we said, it's a journey some people struggle with, they're not sure about, they might be hiding behind it. But luckily enough, with people like yourself out there that's saying, hey, it's okay. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's stuff a lot of us struggle with or suffer from. And here's the answer to do it and to help you. It's not going to cost you a fortune. It's not going to mean that you've got to drastically change your life. It's just got to be change the way you eat certain key areas. You can still enjoy good flavors, quality food, fresh food as well, and through that journey, and take control of your life. And as you said, make food fun again.
Absolutely. Don't be alone in this journey. There's lots of people out there who are going through the same things, and it's okay to be vulnerable. I share my poop stories all the time, so you're definitely not alone. But yes, I'd love to help you make your food fun again. And don't forget the power of getting into the kitchen and just whipping up a nice meal at home. It can really bring some food joy into your house.
That's awesome. And to everyone else that's joined us on the Wolf of Queen Street podcast series today, to the video series or the audio series, once again, thank you for coming over. As I say, usually, if something resonates with the episode today, if something was just made a click with you, all I ask for you is to share to someone else or tell someone else to come on over and have a listen. Because by that way, we can take the story of what Alana has to say and expand it out the world. We can help people that are struggling or unsure where to go next and show them there's places they can talk freely and be supported. But at the end of the day, as I always say, stay powerful, stay beautiful, stay safe. Until next time, see ya.